Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's episode is a timely one. It continues discussing a little bit about Christian Pulisic and that whole drama, that whole saga that's happening here in American soccer, because it's not being covered all that well. Yes, there are two sides of the story. There's the pro-Pulisic camp, and there's the anti-Pulisic camp, and there's the pro-Pochettino side and the anti-Pochettino side, but I haven't seen many folks do it right. So we continue harping on the things that should be harped on and aren't harped on. Once again, this is very important, whether you're a coach in the ecosystem, whether you're a parent in the ecosystem, or any participant in the ecosystem, to get all sides of the story and to get below the surface of the onion itself, so that ultimately, when you do that, you're able to discern what is happening in the marketplace. Then we wrap up the episode with a couple of audience questions. We get these constantly via email, via direct messages, via public messages on Instagram, on X, wherever the case may be, on YouTube itself. Keep them coming, folks, because you stimulate a lot of topics, very good topics that we will address. So I hope you enjoy all the gold nuggets that are going to be dropped in this one. And like always, coaches, you need to go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. What are the programs for? Well, to naturally elevate the level of your coaching, to elevate the level of your teams, and to launch you or catapult you further along the coaching trajectory, the coaching career, if you will. And if you're not a career coach or somebody who wants coaching to be part of their career, doesn't matter. You go there, you get an education that you will not find anywhere else. I guarantee you that. It is the work of a pioneering practitioner here in American soccer. His name is Brian Kleiben. He helped revolutionize so many things in U.S. youth soccer development. And we've seen all the cycles at all the levels, from U9 all the way to and through the professional ranks. You get to see him, witness him coaching in his actual coaching environment. It is not faked. It is not scripted. It is not one of these things that you might see at a conference. It is not one of these things that are rehearsed in any which way. It's the actual players, the actual teams, with the actual coach. And parents, you should go to 343masterclass.com. That is where we've codified the countless lessons that we have learned from being in this business for decades. What are the things that you should know? Well, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go. And last but certainly not least, for those coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. That promotion that I've harped on in the past episodes is still ongoing. So please don't miss out this time around. Last year, we closed the program. Well, we didn't close the program. We doubled the price of the program because it is worth at least double the current pricing. And now we've offered the original pricing once more. So head on over to 7v7coaching.com. If you haven't received those promotional emails, please feel free to reach out to me and I will make sure that you are taken care of. All right, everybody. Benny joins me once again, phenomenal Benny, to talk Pulisic amongst other things. Here we go. What are we talking about, Benny?
Bro, so much, dude. So much is going on right now. Hey, I wanted to say, Gary, I'm proud of you, dude. Mean ass episode. A sick YouTube thumbnail. You got the background. You got the 343. Looks sick, dude.
Cool, man. Cool. Yeah, I just decided, like I told you, I wanted to whip something out quick because, you know, it's the news cycle, and I think it's important. Like, we don't usually cover the news cycle with new things that are going on, but if it's something as significant as this, you kind of have to cover it, not just because, but because I'm genuinely interested. And it's a teaching opportunity, Benny, because if we don't do it right away, guess what? All the unsuspecting folks who want to improve their soccer lives end up getting. They get the bullshit nonsense narratives of all the bullshit people out there who make a living grifting off of the news cycle. So that is what they'll absorb, and they'll absorb zero from the people who actually know a thing or two about the ecosystem, how people comport themselves, what's actually going on. And if we release something a week later, or 2 weeks later, or 3 days later, even 2 days later, they've already been pre-programmed with the retard narrative. So I felt like, hey, this is a teaching opportunity. Let's get it out there right away.
Yeah, dude, if it wasn't for you, people would be relying on Alexi Lalas podcast, bro.
You know, to credit Alexi Lalas, you know, once in a while, a broken clock is right twice a day, as the saying goes, you know. So on his perspective of the whole Pulisic thing, I haven't read everything. Random things come across my X stream, and some of his stuff came across the X stream, and it seems like he's taking Pochettino's side, or he's taking the side of the country and not the side of the player. Now, he might have certain agendas going on, and it might not be 100% genuine or sincere, but whatever it is that he's saying, I agree with it, you know, which is basically, hey, your country's calling you for duty. You report for duty. It's called duty for a reason.
Yep. But I think, Gary, I'm sure it'll come up again on the podcast, but we'll circle back to the whole Pulisic thing. Cheers, my friend. I'm joining you
today. Cheers. Very nice. Is that a Chardonnay?
I wish it was. It's the Pinot Grigio. It's when we had our graduation party last year, and we had bought like 30 bottles of wine, and now we're down to like the last three, dude, thanks to my doing.
That's not bad at all. One whole year and 30 bottles of wine of the whole year. That's like that's one bottle every 2 weeks, dude. That's very disciplined of you.
I guess so. My girl would think otherwise, but it's all good, dude. All good. But yeah, like I said,
we're gonna brand ourselves as the drunk podcast, dude.
No, dude, we keep it classy, bro. I heard once before, maybe you've heard this too, like in the Premier League or leagues overseas, that actually the managers that are playing each other, like before the game, sometimes they'll come to each other's office and have a glass of wine or have a glass of scotch or something. Have you heard that before?
I have. It's incredible. I would have been on my deathbed and I would never have remembered that if it weren't for you bringing it up right now. But yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah. I think that's pretty badass too.
I think it's really cool. Yeah. The visiting coach, the visiting team is like, okay, hey, I'm going to swing by your office or whatever, or go to a fancy restaurant and have a little something. But I don't know how regularly that happens. Like, I can't see Mourinho, you know, having a little wine party with like a Pep Guardiola or something like that. I don't think that happens very often.
Yeah. I think if I remember correctly, it was Sir Alex Ferguson, who like he would always do that for any visiting coach. But I don't know, dude. I have a feeling all the top managers that are like so passionate and animated on the sidelines, I think they're knocking back like maybe two glasses of wine before the game.
Hey, do you remember, or maybe not because you're a young chicken, right? A spring chicken, as they call them. But back in the day, all the coaches, all the managers would smoke like chimneys on the sidelines. Have you ever seen footage of that, at least?
I never saw it live, but I've seen, you know, footage and pictures of the manager smoking. Which is
non-stop chain smoking one after the other. I think one of the most infamous guys is Coco Basile, Argentine manager. Bro, just lighting them up one after the other. He's done with one. He literally goes back to the bench and lights up another one. It's like a coping mechanism. You know, things are so stressful. It's like you just keep going. I'm not surprised. And look, the reality is, and you can leave this in the podcast, really, is that all these teams, travel teams that go to tournaments and everything, half the parents are getting smashed, you know, at these tournaments. And then half the coaches, if not 80% of the coaches, are also getting smashed every night in the hotels and stuff. It's a party scene. And as much as parents and families like to complain and the whole ecosystem complains, oh, youth soccer, it's a racket, you know, all these tournaments and traveling and hotels and kickbacks from hotels and blah, 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 blah. The parents are having a blast times. They're like, they get away from the 9 to 5 or the grind, and they look forward to the weekends of traveling to San Diego or traveling to wherever the heck it happens to be, 2 hours away, an hour and a half away, 4 hours away, or a plane ride away. And they're just getting hammered. You know, that it's like their vacation.
They love it, bro. They love it. But honestly, I think that's like some of the best youth teams are the teams where all the parents are really cool with each other, bro. And they go out to dinner before the games. And, you know, one parent has a flask on the sideline and it's pouring it in all the mom's hydro flask, bro. Like, you know, I'm not advocating for your sideline to be hammered during the game because that can be disastrous. But I think like that sense of community, you're right, bro. The parents love it, dude. They really do. And even if they complain about spending $2,000 for 1 weekend. Like, come on, bro. They love it, dude. They love it.
And then they miss it when it doesn't, it's gone. They miss those days. It's some of the best times of their lives. I'm being sincere, you know, even with all the complaints. And word of advice and caution, even though I think both parties kind of know this anyway, but for the audience, because nobody talks about this, these are opportunities that are I don't know if it's taken advantage of, but coaches have spies, you know, amongst the parents, you know, and the parents are all getting smashed. And then the spies come back and report on everything, on like who's talking shit, you know, who's on part of the team, who's not really part of the team, who's trying to form a coup, who's not trying to form a coup to overthrow you, all that stuff. And kind of vice versa, you know what I'm saying? So there's all kinds of interesting dynamics.
Yeah, dude, there's always a mole, bro. Always. No, dude, but you're right, man. Some of the best team managers that I've had, like we try not to make it known to all the other parents that you're really close with them and like, you know, even go to their house for family dinners. But like behind the scenes, bro, they're reporting everything, dude. Like, oh, I heard from this player that they might go to this team and, you know, Johnny's dad is not happy about last weekend's minutes. And yeah, bro, some of the best team managers I've had.
Yeah, it's rough out there, guys. I'm giving advice to coaches. Hey, that's a good technique for you, right? Develop good confidence with one particular parent, you know, to develop a trusting relationship, and always be careful because there are backstabbers out there who will just play the part like they're trustworthy, but they aren't. But sometimes they're very, very good people and they are very trustworthy and their word is solid gold and they could be your informant, better word. I know I'm kind of screwing coaches over in a certain regard because there's a lot of parents in the audience and the parents will be like, maybe I shouldn't say so much, you know, while I'm getting hammered on tournaments. But yeah, dude, there's so many stories that one can tell.
No, you also have to be careful of the parents that maybe they're not even your manager, but they try and get really close to you and they try and start digging deeper for information, like even like, oh, Benny, what's the lineup going to be next weekend or this and that? And then one thing slips and it gets out to the entire team, bro. That can be a disaster, dude. Disaster.
Totally.
Dude, the world of club soccer is insane, bro.
Totally. And there was a huge backlash when the U.S. Soccer Development Academy was launched in 2007. And then a lot of the MLS teams started partaking in that. One of the first initiatives that was launched by MLS/US Soccer was parents, you have to sit on the other side of the field of the coaches. There's no more intermingling. And then they really hammered hard systematically over the course of time that the coaches, the technical staff, the club is segregated and untouchable by parents. They completely ostracize the parents. Parents, you're nobody. You don't exist over there. And then the club over here. Now there's pros and cons to that. Obviously, on the one hand, it's great from a club/coach perspective in many respects, because that headache, and guys, it is a headache, and I understand it's your kid and it's very important and communication is important, transparency, all those things, but it's a massive time suck if a parent or if a coach has to constantly be handholding and explaining themselves to all the families and constantly explaining themselves as to why the club does things the way that they do. In Europe, if you're at a professional club in La Liga or whatever, there is none of this hand-holding, Benny. There is no the club explaining to them, you know, to the families and the players. That doesn't exist. So I get the professionalization of it all, but you know, if you have a kid, it's kind of like, they've cut the cord on you and you have zero power, zero influence, zero anything.
Yeah. To U.S. Soccer's credit, I kind of love that idea, bro, of having the parents be on the other side, especially at the younger ages, because the 7, 8, even 9 and 10-year-olds, like first thing that they do, they come off that halftime. I've seen it so many times. They go straight to dad or straight to mom and, you know, oh, let me put some sunscreen on you, or, hey, you're doing this great, you know? To the point where you have to, like, again, you have to dress it at the parent meeting and say, hey guys, the kids are coming out at halftime. It's not for you guys to come and give them a pep talk. You know, they need to be with the team. So credit to U.S. soccer, dude. I don't know if I've ever said that on this podcast, bro.
No, yeah, no. I think that's the professionalization side of the equation, and it's
yeah.
Like I'm on board with that for sure.
Yeah. No, dude. I saw LeBron came out and said, I don't know which son it was. Probably not Bronny. Maybe his younger son. But when it comes for his son and his relationship, LeBron's relationship with the coach, it's like LeBron was like, did I never say anything to the coach? I want the coach to be, you know, ripping in on him. I'm never going to come and ask him, like, why isn't my son playing? Or why aren't you putting him in this position? Like, that's the coach's role. And I think a lot of, especially newbie youth soccer parents, they don't understand that, dude. They want to be so involved. I mean, you and Kirk talked about this soft American mentality of daddy always coming to the rescue, bro, or mommy always coming to the rescue. And it's such a major problem that we have in this country, bro. Huge problem.
Totally, man. Totally. Happens with our professional players too. And I'm not just talking about the Reinas. I'm not just talking about Pulisic now. I'm talking about my personal experience with professional soccer players and mommy and daddy, you know, trying to get in the mix constantly.
Yeah. You would think it would stop at a certain point, but I guess it doesn't, dude.
No, not even for a 26-year-old, 27-year-old.
That's crazy, bro. It's funny too, because like the outlets posted like, oh, like here's a screenshot of, you know, Pulisic's dad and everything that he said. Even Pulisic like the post, bro. It's like the shit that who gives a fuck.
This like, is so crazy. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. And you see, even though Pulisic wasn't really developed here in the United States by MLS and this whole culture, really, because he went to Europe early, you know, 15, 16 years of age. And he kind of like launched everything from that point forward with a different culture, different mentality at times. And they have Croatian heritage also. It just, the American thing just permeates all of it. And look, I want to be cautious here because I don't know for a fact, and nobody aside from the inner circles know what the facts are. Okay. But let's speculate a little bit. A lot of this, I can lay the blame on Greg Berhalter and the American entourage that had control of the men's national team for 6 bloody years. And everything I would see from the outside is soft. Oh, the players this and the players that. And let's form like a leadership council where the players can have this council where they talk about things and then they can present their feelings and their ideas, you know, to the coaching staff and what? So imagine for 6 years, this has been the environment, the culture surrounding the national team. And now somebody who's more serious, you know, somebody who's coached Chelsea, who's coached Tottenham in the Premier League, who's coached huge clubs, who's coached PSG, who's coached Espanyol, who's coached the greatest players on planet Earth, comes into this environment and he's confronted with this clown show. So, I mean, you have to draw a line. So if Pochettino is trying to draw a line, and this is news that broke today, right? Where, Pulisic, no, he said he wanted to play the 2 friendlies, but not the Gold Cup. And Pochettino's like, well, if you're not going to play the Gold Cup, fuck you. Like, get the fuck out. All in or you all out, bitch, you know? And this is the proper mentality at these sorts of levels. We're talking about the elite levels of professional athleticism. Benny, we aren't talking about high school or college or youth club soccer or even we're not talking about that, Ben. We're talking about the top of the top of the top of the top, and with a program that presumably wants to aspire to being among the best in the world, and with a World Cup that is only 1 year away, and you don't have to do World Cup qualifying. You're already qualified, so you're not even going to get good games, all that regular. There aren't that many more opportunities to participate. And you got the little player coming saying, oh, well, I'll play these, but I won't play those. And excuse me. No. And again, the fan base, and you can chime in here in a sec. I'm sorry. But the mainstream American soccer fan base, who has been brainwashed by Major League Soccer and brainwashed by the Federation, they are at fault for this sort of stuff too, because they let it get away for years and years and years. And for years, they're like, oh, this player is a lock on the national team. And this other player is also a lock on the national team. And then these are the guys who are kind of on the bubble, and we'll see. But, you know, these six guys, lock starters, lock World Cup, lock for an eternity. They're going to be stalwarts on the U.S. men's national team forever. You're at fault. You created this. Nobody should be a lock. Zero. Nobody here is Messi. Nobody. Nobody's a lock.
Bro, people are so quick to jump to defend Pulisic, bro, and say, like, just some of the comments I've seen, Gary, it's like, what are we talking about? Like, the comments are like, don't you guys realize that Pulisic, you know, he's going through like a mental health thing. This guy's already a lock for the 2026 World Cup. Why wouldn't we want our main guy to have his rest and come in fresh for the World Cup? What are we talking about, guys? It's crazy to me, bro. But what I was thinking before this, bro, like, you know, conspiracy theory. I think it has to do like with his girlfriend, bro. Like, this guy just got a new girlfriend.
I swear, bro.
Just got a new girlfriend like a year ago. You know, the grind of the season. He's probably feeling pressure from her saying, you know, babe, like, we haven't spent any time together. You're already going to the World Cup. Who cares? You know, come and take a break with me. And bro, I say this because like I've lived this myself. Obviously, I'm not on the national team. I'm not a pro athlete. But when it came time for like something that was important that I had to do, and it was like a brand new love, I'm like, fuck that. I'm going to make any excuse that I can to, you know, win this girl over, bro. I don't know. Just throwing that out there, dude.
No. I don't think it's conspiracy at all. And again, I speak from personal experience with professional players.
You know,
like, this is an actual thing. And this is an actual thing that ends up ultimately manifesting in how far you go in your professional life.
Yep.
If you're not willing to give it all up, it's going to be very difficult for you to actually get as far as you can actually get to. So I don't think it's conspiracy. I think it's very rational what you're saying, Benny. And I wouldn't put it past that is indeed the situation.
Yeah, man. I wish you could, you know, share some stories without exposing players. I know we won't on this podcast, but you've seen it firsthand, Gary. I mean, especially young players, the things that they're willing to do, or the things that they're willing to sacrifice, not for the game, but for their friends or a new significant other. It just like tanks your career, bro. Because think about it, you spend your whole youth fucking grinding every single day, touching the ball. All of a sudden you're a pro, you have some money. You have girls all over you, and it's just distractions that you've never had in your life before. And now all of a sudden there's something else that is occupying your mind versus it being soccer 24/7, like it has been their entire life, you know?
Yeah. The thing that really bugs me isn't so much the players or that, because they're humans, I get it. What really bugs me are folks who say, oh, but they're human beings, let them live their life. You know, it can't be soccer 24/7. They need balance in their lives. Where were you when you were 18? Where were you when you were 25? You know, where were you when X, Y, and Z, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, but motherfucker, I wasn't trying to be a professional athlete and be successful as a professional athlete, which is such a competitive environment that one false move, one slip up, one bad habit, one too many excursions or liberties that you take, and you don't recover from that. It's over. So if a player, for example, or if the family of a player wants to fulfill their potential, wants to get to the highest levels, wants to, you know, get to here, then get to there, make this salary, make that salary, be on the national team, all that stuff. If that's truly and sincerely your goal, nobody should come to me or to anybody saying, oh, well, Gary, you know, they're only 20 No, if this is their goal, well, guess what? There's one path to get there and only one path. You have to sacrifice. Nothing comes without sacrifice. So here we are, 2025, 1 year out from the World Cup, and we've got somebody who we have kinged, you know, the greatest American soccer player of all time, coming in and dictating terms to the new coach, dictating terms to a world-class international caliber type manager, dictating terms that I'll show up for this, but I'm not going to show up for that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, guys. It doesn't work this way.
Yep. No, man. Sacrifice. I don't know if you've seen my shirt, dude. You see who that is?
Kobe?
Kobe, bro. Think about how many birthday parties, anniversaries, you know, engagement parties that this guy missed because he was grinding. I mean, he came out and said so many times, like, he'd wake up at 3 a.m. and put in the extra time, the extra shifts, 3-a-day sessions, you know, film sessions, just so that he could, at the end of the day, you know, spend little time with his family before getting back to the grind, bro. Like, you know, so many players aren't willing to put in that sacrifice, dude. But
if you want to be the best, you got to do it, Ben.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, Gary, to see how he does respond. I mean, I don't see any way that Pochettino leaves him off the World Cup roster, regardless of all of this. But I don't know, dude. Maybe he comes back and he's a machine and scores 2 goals a game, or I don't know, dude. But one thing's for sure, he's received a lot of backlash, a lot of criticism, you know, rightly so. But I'm curious to see how he's going to come back then.
I don't care. If he comes back and he kills it, he's amazing and all that stuff, it doesn't fucking matter to me. I could give a shit. It sets a bad precedent too. It's like, okay, yeah. So this guy gets to do all this stuff and these other guys also kind of get to do this sort of stuff. It sets a bad precedent, man. And that's why I am very proud, you know, of the Argentine heritage that Pochettino has. That Pochettino's like, no, we don't do that here. Are you in or are you out? Oh, you don't want to do the whole thing? Okay, you're out. We can't have you here. See ya.
Yeah. But do you think you would really leave him off a roster? I don't know. I can't see that happening, dude.
You know why? You know why it probably won't happen? Because this country is all about marketing. Soccer in this country is not about being the best. It's not about being competitive. It's not about all the things that we equate to sport. It's about marketing. So this is the golden boy of American soccer marketing. And so it's going to be difficult. I mean, Jurgen did it. Jurgen said, oh, Landon, you're out. Peace. But and then look what they did to Jurgen. Jurgen was right. Oh. Jurgen made the right decision, 100% unequivocally the right decision. And look at what the media did at the behest of Major League Soccer. And so they're thinking about all this stuff. Major League Soccer, U.S. Soccer is thinking about all this stuff to try to maybe get ahead of it and talk to Pochettino or talk him down or something and say, hey, just look the other way. Or I'm sure those conversations are happening, man.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, dude. It's like you said, dude, Jurgen did it and he was crucified. You know,
I would chop suey.
Legend, bro. That's why I said, like, last time, we need to get you in as president of U.S. soccer.
Look, I can be very diplomatic. I can say the right things as well. I can work with people. Folks can look at the interview that I did with Kirk Kinsey, not the last one that we just published yesterday, but right. The one I'm going to publish in a couple days that went up on his own podcast. And since I was a guest on his show and his podcast, and it's supposed to be family friendly, not a single F-bomb, all very calm, not my usual passionate self. I was a suit at that point. So do I have the capability of being a suit? Sure, I can. Okay. But behind closed doors, I'm going to get shit done one way or the other. And unfortunately for some folks, that other way is chop suey. You're out. You're not with the program. You're not serious. You're not a hard worker. You can't be trusted. Look, you're out. Get the fuck out. Never want to see you again.
Yep. I'm proud of you, dude. That's impressive, dude. Not dropping an F-bomb for an entire episode.
It's very good, isn't it?
Well done, dude. Well, I said that we were going to save the Pulisic stuff for the end, but, you know, it came up. Of course it did. How is it not going to come up? I owe a response to somebody that reached out to us a few weeks ago. I promised him that I bring this up on the podcast. I think it's a good question, especially for, you know, there's a lot of people that are in this position. But he says, hey, Gary, I have a question for you. From your point of view, would coaching my son through his soccer journey be something that could possibly hold him back from growing? Or could that constant motivation be something positive? I coach his U18 now, and I don't know if I should stop or continue. Thoughts?
So this is soccer dad, right?
Soccer dad.
I'm not going to weasel my way out of the very true fact that context matters. And so the answer, the real answer is it depends. And I'd have to know all the intricacies of what's going on. But
really general quick comment. Funny that you should ask that, because I messaged him back and said, can you share some context with me, like his soccer background? Because I knew you would say that. But he says, played club growing up through high school in SoCal, and I've been coaching my son's rec team and club team for the last 2 years. I also coach high school. Obviously, I know you need a lot more context than that, but that just to give you an idea.
Yeah, no, that's good, because that's the first thing that I think of is, have you played? Number one, have you ever played the game? That's very important. Next up is, okay, how far did you get in your playing? Like, kind of like what level-ish are you at? The next thing I think about is, what's your heritage? And people might think that's somehow somehow discriminatory or racist. Like, why does his heritage matter? You know, guys, culture matters. You know, if you grew up in Argentina and it's a soccer crazed country where soccer is more important than almost God himself, you have a different soccer education and feel in the blood than somebody who's from the United States and grew up playing gridiron football or baseball or something like that, and always thought that soccer was for pussies, you know, and soccer is a girl sport and stuff. Like, if you grew up like that, and the other guy grew up in Argentina, and you put them both on a field to coach their kids, it's going to be wildly different outcomes, wildly different sort of things. So the heritage absolutely does matter. I can go on and on. Why are so many chess masters from Russia, for instance? Why are so many professional gamers, world-class gamers from Korea, for instance, and not from, you know, somewhere else? Because of the culture, because of your heritage, because where you're from. So anyways, that's all part of the context. Now to the question, currently coaching his U8 son, it's fine. You don't need like a professional coach at U8. In my estimation, you probably don't need a professional coach until maybe you're U11, U12, maybe U12 when the kid's 11 years old or something. Up until that point, you can get away with just having the kid having a great time and falling in love with the game and getting as many touches, whatever that means. And then you hand them off to somebody professional. Can the son or the player fall behind somebody who has a professional coach at age 7 already? Yes, you can absolutely fall behind. But back to the context, who is this gentleman going to pass his son off to? Because if he passes his son off to, you know, a coach that's coaching club and is getting paid for and all this sort of stuff, it's a bell curve. The probability is that you're not going to get somebody amazing. There aren't that many. Okay, the probability is that you're going to get it somebody who's like, meh, whatever. And so it's not like your son's going to massively benefit from being in a meh, whatever sort of coaching environment. So I don't think you're doing any sort of harm. I think keep going. As a matter of fact, another thought is, maybe if you continue coaching him for a few more years, you're going to learn more and more about coaching and more about soccer itself, so that when you do hand him off to somebody else, you're even better prepared to identify who you're handing him off to.
Yeah, Gary, two things. Maybe I missed it when you said it, but obviously the kid right now is on a U8 team. At what age did you think that he should, you know, pass it off to a coach? And then the other thing I'm curious about is, you know, you mentioned professional coach, right? But this kid's 7 years old now. Even by the time he turns 11, 10, 11, 12, you know, if the dad were to take him to another club, you know, what do you consider as a professional coach? Obviously, the kid's not going to be going into some type of, I don't know, maybe the kid's a phenom and maybe he is, but most likely he's not going to be going into an academy type environment, right? So how do you even define what a professional coach is?
It's a good question. I'm glad you brought it up. I was trying to draw a distinction between a dad coaching a son and the dad doesn't make a living off of coaching, not even a little bit, versus a coach that maybe does make a living off of coaching, or at least partially makes a living off of coaching. That's kind of what I was, in this context, calling a pro coach. Now, there's levels to this, and obviously that definition of a pro coach is not who I would call a pro coach when I compare that person to, you know, a U17 academy coach, right? Who's trying to develop professionals. That's a completely different story.
Got it. And then, you know, at what age do you think this guy should, you know, stop coaching his son? Because I think you're right. I think the kid's young, 7 years old. I think he can even get away with it for the next 2-3 years. But I think at some point, the kid needs to hear from another voice, somebody that's not the parent. The other problem, Gary, that I see with parent coaches is sometimes they maybe feel pressure to not play their kid, their son or daughter, because then even if the kid deserves it and he merits his way to playing time, maybe he's hearing from the mole on the team, right? Or other parents like, oh, then, you know, this guy's only playing because his dad is the coach, you know, and I see that dilemma happen a lot.
Yeah. I mentioned it, maybe the communication dropped out, but I kind of said U11-ish. Benny, okay. Is maybe when to consider. So maybe, like you said, maybe a couple or a few more years, you can kind of get away with this. But you bring up a good point, which is hearing from another voice. That's very important, too, and getting a little a different perspective. And, you know, the kid also has to learn, the sooner he learns, listening to somebody other than daddy and mommy, I think that's important, too.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it's hard to draw that balance. My dad was never my coach, but I don't know if you know this, Gary. My first 2 years at Troy, actually Danny, my brother, was my coach for 2 years, bro. I hated him, bro. Because, you know, even if I did, dude, I really did. You know, there was games when he didn't play me and I felt like, I don't know, maybe I was wrong, but I felt like I, you know, worked my ass off in training and was doing all the right things and was one of the better players. And yeah, bro, this, for some reason, like a span of 2-3 games, this guy just like sat me out. And I felt like it had nothing to do with the actual team training environment and like more so to do with the fact that like, oh, this is my little brother. If I don't play him, like it's not going to matter. You know what I mean? It's just a weird dynamic, dude. It's a weird dynamic.
Sounds like a question for your brother, man. See what the hell was going on.
No, maybe he'll come back and say like, nah, dude, you sucked, bro.
I can see him saying that for sure, man. Yeah, that guy's savage. No joke. And then, no. So this was probably like one of his first coaching gigs then, right? When was this?
So I started high school in 2011. I think at that point, I feel like at that point he wasn't coaching with Brian. I know it was probably close to starting with TFA, but yeah, probably one of his like first or second gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Inexperienced, man.
Totally. Or maybe he was, you know, what's funny, dude, is that a lot of my teammates and like high school friends that I haven't seen in a while and like I'll see him and we meet up and we talk about it. They're like, dude, your brother was the best coach I ever had. So I'm like, really? This guy was shocking, bro. But no, dude, he made an impact on the kids. That's for sure. Legend.
That's
bro.
An interesting story, man. I never heard of it.
Yeah, I'll have to call him after and tell him. All right. So there you go. I hope that answer did it justice. I always not look down on or frown upon, but I think the sooner that you can get somebody else coaching your kid, the better. And maybe, you know, the kid, maybe he doesn't like it, but you're his dad and, you know, he doesn't want to tell you like, oh, like, I wish you weren't my coach or I don't know, dude. Again, it's just a weird dynamic, bro. Like even.
I'm curious as to what his reasoning for continuing is. Does he feel that he's the best man for the job of the coaching? Does he feel that, you know, he wants to protect his kid? Does he feel like, I'm wondering what is his incentive for continuing? It's cool that he's asking the question. Like he's trying to find solutions and what is best for his kid, obviously. But I'd be curious as to a little bit more, you know?
Yeah. Well, he says an important phrase in his question. He says the constant motivation. You know, so I'm thinking he's thinking like after the game in the car, on the car ride homes, this guy's able to like, I don't know, give the kid notes or keep it. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And it's crazy too, because this dynamic even happened at the national team level. Look at, you know, Bob Bradley and Michael Bradley. Like to me, that would be weird, bro. If I'm on the national team and my dad's a coach, not to say that Michael Bradley was a slouch, you know, he was decent, but. Just weird, bro.
It is very strange. I don't like it. Well, viewing it from the outside, when I see at the professional level, father-son sort of thing, I mean, like I mentioned with Kirk, the son has to have at least a threshold level of talent and capability and skill to to play at the pro level, right? But let's not kid ourselves. You know, they're afforded opportunities that other players with equivalent levels of skill and talent are not afforded. And so you have that leg up. There's no question about it, Ben. And once you're afforded those opportunities, and granted, the player has to take advantage of them, you enter this virtuous cycle where you continue getting more and more opportunities over and over and over again. And the road to establishing yourself as somebody who's going to have a long career at the top is almost assured once you get on that virtuous cycle.
I think, Gary, you can still have a massive impact even if this guy was not the coach of his team, or let's say he gives it up next season. You could still, I mean, we've talked about it so many times, the importance of the parents' influence and how it can be good or bad, but, you know, take him to the park and get extra touches with him. It helps for sure that this guy has a background in soccer and he played growing up. I mean, I'm sure this guy has a bunch of different, hopefully he's, you know, taking his son to the wall and stuff like that. But I think you can make a massive influence on your child. If I just know for me personally, Gary, like, I don't think I'll ever coach my son's team, bro. I don't think I can do it, dude. Because then it's going to be like, oh no, this kid's my son. I'm going to put this fool on the bench because, you know, it's fine if he's on the bench, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It seems like it's just an added distraction. Right? Yeah. So instead of you focusing on, quote unquote, the job at hand, which is looking out for the best interest of the whole team, looking out for the best interest of all the players, trying to figure out how to make this team and these players successful, you know, long term, how are you going to approach the next game? It seems to me, I have no experience in it, that there's a little kernel in the back of your mind that is your son as well. Whether you want it or whether you intend to do it or not, it's there. So it's like a distraction from the job.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, dude, I brought up this movie before. It's a stupid ass movie of fucking Kicking and Screaming with Will Ferrell, bro. And this guy ends up like taking over his... Nah, dude, it's important in this discussion, bro. He ends up taking over his son's team because like the grandpa wasn't playing the kid and, you know, he wants his kids to play, bro. And, you know, so for the first couple of games, the kid's playing, you know, and then fucking Will Ferrell ends up signing these like two Italian kids that are just like fucking phenoms, bro. And like, sure enough, towards the end of the season, like this guy only cares about winning. And so like he leaves his son on the bench and his wife starts getting pissed. Like, oh, like your son hates you now, bro. Just so many dynamics, bro.
I wonder how many folks in the audience, soccer parents, have watched that movie. And if they haven't, they should watch it and report back. Dude. Is it as good as Benny is saying it is?
Oh, bro. I mean, for me, that movie came out when I was like, I don't know, 10, bro. And I love Will Ferrell. Well, that was funny, dude. So that was like a classic for me, dude. You should watch it, bro. You should watch it. You like Will Ferrell? You know?
I did. And then...
And then he... And I then he bought...
And then he's part of like the ownership group of LAFC, and that just taints his whole reputation for me. Like, I'm not interested. Hey, guys, get it straight. I don't hate MLS and I don't hate people involved with MLS. If I was them, I would do the same thing. I would want a monopoly also. I would want nobody to take over my monopoly. I respect it. I respect the game, okay? But I'm not in the game, right? I'm not an owner, and I'm not one of these bureaucrats or politicians grifting off of the monopoly. And so I look at Will Ferrell, and he's there with his stupid little LAFC hat. And I'm like, you're not even a fucking soccer person. Like, nah, you're tarnished. I cannot stand his face anymore.
Yeah, but think about it, Gary. This guy doesn't know, bro. This guy doesn't know everything.
I know.
Going on behind the scenes and doesn't. Maybe now he does that, you know, but like think about when he first invested, his agent is like, hey, like there's an opportunity, LA soccer club coming, like might as well invest in it. Like for them,
I don't blame him.
Yeah, dude. Why wouldn't he?
I don't blame him. It's just you're part of that whole mafia, whether you know it or not. It's like, nah, moving on. Like the only one who is kind of preserved his image with me that's part of the mafia is Beckham. Like for some reason, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the English accent. I don't know if it's that I liked him as a player. I don't know if it's he's just a smooth talker. I don't know if it's that he's with Posh Spice. I have no idea. Okay. I don't know. But for me, the guy's cool and I would totally kick it with him and not be a hater or anything. But some of these other fools, you know what it is? Maybe it's because David's actually a soccer person.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He gets it, bro, because he's lived it in Europe, dude. He's lived it. He's lived the whole experience with United and Madrid. And then he comes over here. Like, he knows, bro.
Yeah. Cool. It's like one of these SAT questions or whatever. Like, one is not like the other. Identify which one is not like the other. And David's not like the rest of the bureaucrats, politicians, scumbags who are grifting off of the American soccer public. Like, he's different. So that's what it is, actually.
Yeah, true. This is unrelated, but it keeps coming up on the Instagram feed, like Taylor Twellman show of the podcast is called Soccer or something like that. And, you know, they're talking about MLS like trades and like transfer rumors and who should this team sign. And to me, I'm just thinking like, bro, this is pointless, bro. Like the MLS is not even a competition, dude. So why does it matter, bro? Their most recent one was like, oh, like LAFC was, you know, considering signing Ronaldo, and is that going to help their team the rest of the season? I'm like, who cares, bro? It doesn't matter. They can win this year or they can get last place and no pasa nada, dude.
Yeah. They're in the entertainment business. They're just trying to entertain and attract an audience that is looking for bubblegum content, you know, an audience that's looking to veg out on trash TV or trash podcasts or trash entertainment. And that's what they do, you know, and that's how they make a living. And there's a huge audience for that. You know, sometimes I come home and I'm destroyed from work and my brain will not enable me to continue doing technical work or business related work. And I need to shut it off. So I'll turn on some trash in the background. Don't ask me what that trash is, but I'll turn on some trash.
Stop, bro. You don't turn on fucking these. Are you talking about soccer? Or are you talking about other stuff?
No. If you're thinking about like the Kardashians or something, I'm not doing that sort of stuff.
I'm talking about like the show I just mentioned, right? Like Taylor Twellman show.
Zero. Okay, I do not consume a single piece of American soccer content. It doesn't happen. If you have if you have a soccer podcast out there, I'm not listening to it. If you have a soccer YouTube channel, I'm not watching it. I consume zero soccer media in this country. Zero, nothing, ever.
Yeah.
That's not me shutting off my brain. That would be torture to my brain. That's literally torture. No, the trash is kind of like I'll tune into the White House press secretary giving her little thing and doing her little Q&A or something, and maybe I'll be cooking up a ribeye, you know, and that shit will be on the background. So that's like my trash TV.
Yeah, no, I see it, dude. Hey, but I brought up Taylor Trump. You've had like plenty of conversations with Taylor in the past, no? Good guy.
I think so. I think. He means well. I think he also kind of gets it, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Gets it. It's just the way I view it, and I hope people forgive me and Taylor, sorry, but it's just my perspective, and I'm glad to be wrong. You can correct me, but they have to make a living off something, and their quote unquote expertise, the thing that they've been involved with their whole life, is soccer. So somebody like Taylor has been a soccer player his whole life and played professionally, and then, you know, what do you do once you retire from a professional game if you haven't made millions of dollars? And I know that that generation of American soccer players do not have millions in the bank when they retire. They're poor as fuck. So now they have to get a day job. What is somebody like that to do? You didn't study. You're not going to go be a doctor or an engineer or anything of that sort. Are you going to go back to school and get a degree? You know, okay, what's that degree going to be in, and how much you're going to be in debt because you don't even have money, right? Barely any. So what do? You go be a coach somewhere and coach soccer, or you go into media. And some of these guys go into media, and now all of a sudden, since you're operating in the American soccer environment, Ben, you are the subject of the monopoly. You are a You are a slave. You operate at the pleasure of the monopoly. Okay. So if you please the monopoly, you can continue having a job. And if you don't please the monopoly, you're not going to be in that broadcasting business or that media business anymore. So I understand, you know, why they might do the things that they do. The problem is, and I'll end with this, Ben, sorry, is once you do it for an extended period of time, you kind of brainwash yourself into believing the monopoly horseshit nonsense. You think you're actually one of the good guys at this point, because imagine everybody that you're surrounded with is part of the monopoly. Everybody you speak to then and communicate with is part of the monopoly who believe the monopoly stuff. And so and then you start regurgitating the monopoly narrative, because that's what you're supposed to do. So over the course of years, Benny, you kind of like brainwash yourself, and the environment brainwashes you to actually be one of them at this point. So you're lost. You're forever. You're gone at this point. So I don't know if folks are capable enough, or they have enough willpower or mental fortitude or strength to be able to segregate the horse shit from what you really believe, you know, but you won't say. I think they end up kind of merging together and you become part of the Borg.
Yeah. No, all those guys, there must be things that they want to say that they really can't. Otherwise they'd be out of the job, you know? And I get it, dude. You're right. I mean, think about their contracts back in the day. I mean, they were playing for peanuts, bro. So at the end of the day, soccer has been your whole career. You never, I'm sure some of these guys got degrees, but you know, what else are you going to do, bro, when you retire? So no, but I think you're right, dude. I mean, Taylor seems like a genuine guy that seems to kind of know what's going on. But again, he's kind of beholden to what he can and can't say, because if he does, he's out of a job, bro.
Yeah, man, you're pardon the expression, but you are a bitch to the monopoly. You are the monopoly's bitch. You're their prison bitch. You ain't doing nothing. You're obeying.
No. All right, dude, I have another question for you. I like this one. This is, I actually think, if I remember correctly, this guy went to high school with you, or he played soccer with you in high school or something. He emailed you and says, I have a six-year-old that's not aggressive at all. And I'm telling him to attack and go for the ball and not to be scared. My 11-year-old at 5 and 6 years of age was a mini Eric Cantona or a Gattuso. What info do you and Benny have? Thanks, and hope to hear from you soon. And what's funny, Gary, is some people will hear this and be like, what are you talking about? He's 6 years old. He should be having fun. Right.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. I mean, you talked about last time, baby football in Uruguay. These guys are killing each other, bro. I watched some of those videos.
It's funny. Let me give you some background or context on this guy. I remember the email, obviously, and I think I forwarded it to you, right? I forward you all these emails many a time so you can bring it up. So without doxing him, because I don't know if he wants to be doxed, I played high school with him. He was the goalkeeper. And maybe people, if they do the research, they'll probably be able to figure it out. But I literally just doxed him, kind of. Played goalkeeper, Mexican-American, and he had a unique personality in the sense that he was all about aggression. That was literally all he was about. He wanted to like kind of fight. He wanted to, you know, break people's kneecaps, break their shins, dirty as hell. You know, if you're going to go 1v1 with him as the keeper or anything, like, you kind of want to get out of the way, because this guy's likely to just studs up on you, sort of thing. So that's kind of like his brand. And so I actually laughed a little bit when I read his email. I'm actually like not surprised, because he's probably seen his kid or one of his kids not being like that and being soft. Maybe he's like, I can't have a soft kid. Like, this is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? But I'm sorry to report, buddy, but from my experience, some players have it in them and some players just don't have it in them. And the closest I've seen anybody capable of changing behavior, and again, it's not because my brother, maybe you can testify to this, is Brian. Brian had such a capability to connect with kids of all ages, you know, from 8 years old to 19, 25-year-olds, that they would want to run through a wall for him, right? And so if he's had this capability of instilling the passion in the players to the point where they would then reflect much of that on the field, even if they were soft, he would make them less soft. I mean, he wasn't going to turn them into an Eric Cantona or a Gattuso, but it helped. But ultimately, the human is the human, in my experience, Ben. I don't know if you disagree with that. And it fades away once the coach is no longer the coach, and they just revert back to what their DNA has encoded in them. So maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, buddy. I wish I had a solution for you, but maybe that's just the type of son you've got, man. Sorry.
Well, it sounds like his first son took after him, and maybe his second son took after the wife, or not trying to be sexist, you know, but I don't
know.
Could you,
how about this? And I'm going way off over my skis here because I'm not an expert in these sorts of things, but you hear headlines or you read some things over the course of your life, and it's kind of like the oldest son, the firstborn, is usually the one that has to take more shit, you know, from the parents, and is like quote unquote harder. If that even, I understand that I'm, you know, throwing myself flowers here, but the second kid or the third kid and the fourth kid, they progressively maybe get a little bit softer because they're able to get away with everything with the parents at that point. They don't get punished as much. They don't rebel as necessarily with the same sort of angles or fervor or whatever, because as growing up, like, the parents just let them do whatever they want. So I don't know.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, Gary, is so for the audience, like, I have two older brothers. Obviously, we talked about Danny a lot. The middle one, Nick, and then myself, I'm the youngest. When I remember watching Danny play, I don't ever remember him being like fucking Eric Cantona or like Gattuso or getting stuck in hard to challenges. The person that did that was actually Nick. Like, watching his games, like, this fool would not be scared to get stuck in for a 50-50, or even if he knows he's going to get smashed, like, this guy has just fearless, bro. And he was a center back for his high school. I mean, I remember watching so many of his games and just, like, wrecking players, bro. Like, complete no fear mentality. I'm going to get stuck in no matter what. And so I don't know, maybe, you know, Danny being the firstborn was maybe coddled a little bit more, and by the time the second one came around, it was less of that. And I don't know, for me personally, Gary, I don't think I was that type of player either to, like, get stuck in hard. And I mean, I remember when I was on the Rage team, I would see my teammates, like, absolutely just going into, like, crush the defender for, like, a 50-50, and me thinking to myself, like, what the fuck, like, this guy's gonna get hurt or something, you know. And that was never me, bro. So I don't know. I think you're right, dude. I think it kind of just is, when it comes to this type of stuff, like, the person is who they are. Can you change it? Maybe. Like, you gave a good example of Brian having his players want to, you know, run through walls for them. But I don't know if it can be changed or not, dude. I don't think there's like, hey, you know, I don't think you can say, hey, do these three activities at training, and now all of a sudden you're going to have a bulldog on your hands. I think it's maybe also, you know, environment and how the kid is raised. Like, if your kid is 3 years old and he's walking and he falls and he starts crying, are you immediately, you know, oh, it's okay, you know, babying them? Or are you making them a little bit tougher, dude? So I don't know, dude. I'm not an expert in child psychology and all of this type of stuff, but I think you're right. I think some people just have it, man, that no fear. I don't give a fuck. I don't care if I get a concussion or break my ankle. I'm going in for this tackle. You know, I was never that type of player. Were you?
I think I view myself a lot in many respects like Danny, in the sense that you described, like, in the beginning. No, it was actually, I take it back. When I was maybe age 3, and I do remember some things when I was age 4 playing. Okay. When I was age like 3, 4-ish up until maybe 11, 12-ish. I recall being an animal, just a savage. And then from 12 to maybe 16, 17, no, soft, not strong. But I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, that puberty came on late for me. You know, I ended up being small relative to everybody else. Like, my first driver's license when I was 16, 17 years old, I was 5'7", Benny, weighing 115 pounds or something like that. And now you know what I am, 6'3", 210 or something like that. And then after age 17, 18, when I had that spurt, like age 18, 19 or so, then I became kind of dirty and nasty again. Back to Danny, though. Danny, maybe I'm remembering this wrong, Ben. When he was aging out of the original Rage team with Brian and he was playing U18, U19, and he kind of really came into his own and he blossomed into an extremely valuable player for us, I think he was hard at that point. Like, he would go into tackles hard and try to mess people up too. Or no, or am I crazy?
I don't know. Maybe when he started wearing the bandanas.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe he just had like a different mentality.
Okay. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong. I just remember him completely becoming somebody very valuable, where he was a starter on Brian's national championship team. And he was a polyfunctional player. We would put him outside back at times. We put him in midfield, put him up top. He'd play everywhere. And without fear, the guy would just get after it, you know, no matter who was the opponent. So I don't know. And I hope, whoever's out there and believes in all this child psychology, child development stuff, please don't comment. Please don't email me. Please don't send me stupid ass research papers, and because I don't respect it. Okay.
Well, no, it's funny that you bring that up about Danny, Gary, because I know when he first joined the team, not that he wasn't valuable, but he definitely wasn't a starter. He definitely wasn't a 90-minute guy. You know, he had his qualities, but there's definitely a lot of stuff lacking in his game. But then, like you said, as they were aging out, he became 17, 18. I remember going to those games, and the thing that I remember, I don't remember getting him like stuck in the tackles like that, but I do remember him completing all of his passes, you know, being in the right spaces at the right times, reading the plays really well. And even when Bryant's team won the national championship at that age, I think my mom ended up going, it was in North Carolina, you know, and she called us, said like, hey, like, Danny scored a goal in the final to like couple. I was like, what the fuck? Like, Danny? Like, no way. Because, dude, you had so many like fucking amazing players on that team, dude. Prieto, Choco, Jacob Barone, like that one full Peter Crouch. What was that fellow's name?
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Yeah, of course, like, man.
That was huge, bro.
Yeah, I don't remember him exactly, but man, I wish we had like so much footage from those teams back then show people. Dude. And the players were amazing. Like half the team who was nothing before ended up getting D1 scholarships to, you know, great universities. And Jose Gomez and Choco went on to be a Herman Trophy finalist. And I mean, we're talking, it was a very, very talented group.
Hey, there is zero footage of that team that exists, though.
No, there is some, but I'd have to dig through boxes, and it's probably buried in some sort of hard drive somewhere, which I'd have to revitalize. Yeah.
I would love to see that, bro.
I'm pretty sure there might be a couple video clips on the YouTube channel, like where what's his name? Richie. There was a player called Richie. I forget his last name now. Ended up playing a little bit of pro. Ended up playing a little bit for the El Salvadorian national team, or was it Guatemala? I forget. So this is the type of situation that we have on our hands, like really talented guys. We had Carlos Alvarez, you know, Efra's older brother. He joined us for, I think it was like maybe half a season at the very end, you know, when we made that championship run. He wasn't part of the championship run team, but he came back when it was like U19 or something. He had already played a season of college. I think players were able to come during like their summer breaks and actually play some club football, because there was still U19, right? So you still had 18-year-old players who played a season of college and come back and play a little bit of club soccer. A lot of good players, man.
Yeah. Oh, bro. That was the good old days, bro. There's a quote from The Office, bro. That I know you watch The Office, where the guy... Andy, he's like, I wish there was a way to know you're in the good old days before you actually left them. You know, like, bro, I have some of the best memories just watching that team play, watching their trainings. It's crazy, bro. Oh, you know what I wanted to say about the topic of, you know, being aggressive and, you know, how can the kid help? I think one thing that does help that is having the kid play with older kids, or having them some type of pickup environment where they're getting punked, or they're the little man that we like to say. I think that's huge, bro, because again, like I mentioned to you, Gary, I was a soft player, and it wasn't until I started playing, you know, at the Boys and Girls Club with you know, Brian's older team, and I was getting punked. And at that, at, you know, in that context, you can't be soft, bro. Like, sure, you're still going to get pushed around and tackled. But then when you go back to kids that are your own age, it's like, bro, this guy has nothing, bro. I'm going to smash this guy right now.
That's good advice, Ben. Again, context matters in my opinion, because imagine if you have like a 7-year-old kid, you throw him in there and he doesn't have like you had your older brothers there. You had me playing, you had Brian playing, and you kind of knew ultimately at the end of the day, we had your back, you know, and you knew at the end of the day that it was all like tough love. We're all fun and games. You know what I'm saying? And we were there to kind of sense it and have to intervene if we had an interview. But if you're a 7-year-old kid and you're all alone and you just throw them to the wolves, maybe it'll shut them down too.
Yeah. I think I two-footed you one time.
Well, I don't. Listen, if it was legit, I would remember it. I don't even remember it.
I definitely megged you a couple times, right?
It was no chance. It was probably like a little mosquito, you know, to me. It's like,
That's funny, bro. Hey, you know, dude, I know really quick. I know we brought this guy up on the podcast before, but Jacob Arone, like I told you, I ran into him a couple of weeks ago. He's like, oh, let me add you to this group chat of, you know, pick up soccer. And I think we should go, bro. I think we kind of get out of retirement. Let's do it, bro.
All right. I'm down. I'll go with my busted up knee. I don't care.
Dude, your knees should be fine, bro.
If I got an MRI, I think people would be like, bro, how are you walking?
Yeah, bro. We'll see. But Gary, look at your mentality. You're willing to go and play pickup with a busted knee. Melissa can't even show up for camp, bro.
Easy.
All right, bro.
If you want to draw parallels, draw parallels with 40-year-old Ronaldo and 40-year-old Luka Modric.
Oh, bro. Yeah, that's insane, dude. That's insane. Modric still got it, bro. But that guy can ball, bro.
100%, man. He's the type, I think, when he's 60 years old and he goes to play like how we play now and just pick up at certain parks or whatever, he'll be 60 and basically like walking, but you can't, he'd be the best player on the field. You can't do anything to him.
No, you can't get close to him, dude, no matter how hard you try. All right, dude, good stuff. Good luck cleaning the rest of your place, bro.
Okay.
Hey, where's in your place again? Lake Forest?
It's in Lake Forest. So for folks out there, we might start recording live, you know, in person with one another.
Oh, dude, that'd be sick.
Improve the experience a little bit. Maybe have some guests come over to the actual studio.
I think so, dude. I think that'd be nice to invest in 2 or 3 cameras. Make it bro. It'd be the Gary Claiborne experience.
Are you gonna edit the footage from 3 cameras?
I'll let AI do it, bro.
All right, brother. Let's leave it there. I'm still planning on seeing you tomorrow, though, okay?
Yeah, I'll be there, bro. Sounds good.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant, possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers, everyone, and keep building.